You know, Red Panda comes up in conversation a lot these days, and as a streaming technology, it's definitely a part of the broader real-time analytics ecosystem. So I had my friend Dunath Danushka on the show to tell us all about it. What is it? Is it the same as Kafka? How is it different? What kind of things do you use it for? He gives us all that and more on today's episode of the Real-Time Analytics Podcast. Let's listen in. Hello and welcome to another episode of the Real-Time Analytics Podcast. I am your host, Tim Berglund, and I'm very happy to be joined in the virtual studio today by Dunath Danushka. Dunath is a senior developer advocate at Red Panda and former coworker of mine. Dunath, it's great to see you again.
Hi, Tim. Good morning, and thanks for having me on the show. Yeah, it's a good to have
of course.
Catch up.
Well, yes, good to catch up, and we've been trying to schedule this for a while. I'm fairly confident this will not be your last appearance on the Real-Time Analytics Podcast, if I have anything to say about it. So, you know, in another 6 months, we'll be able to get another one on the schedule.
I hope not, yeah.
So, what is Red Panda?
Let's put it like this. So let's start from the very top level, and then bird's eye view, and then we can go down. So Red Panda is a giant message buffer. You can think of it like as the first thought, right? So there's a message buffer in between two components. Let's say we have a producer and we have a consumer application. And all these two components, they communicate with each other through Red Panda. So when producer wants to send a message to consumer, what it does is, it doesn't know about the consumer, and the consumer also doesn't know about the producer. So what the producer do is, it sends a message to Red Panda, and then the consumer, on the other hand, it is eagerly waiting to hear from anything coming from Red Panda. It's like you are waiting on your mailbox until some Christmas card arrives. So seasonal greetings. So that's how Red Panda, you can think of Red Panda in very high level. But if we take it a little bit down, in technical terms, it's an immutable append-only lock. So that's a correct technical difference.
I was going to say, it sounded like you were describing a message, an old-style message queue for a second there, and I thought was... I actually, for the benefit of the readers, don't know very much about Red Panda in detail. This is one of those episodes where I'm just getting to ask questions and learn from a friend. But I know enough to know it wasn't a queue. So immutable append only log. That's a key phrase.
Yes. I think
what's the difference in the event? I mean, we've had episodes on Kafka, and like a lot of people know what Kafka is, but plenty of people still don't understand that distinction. So I want to let you just go on for a minute, but the difference between queue and log would be an interesting thing to explore at some point.
Yes. So in queue, in message brokers, so we can take this conversation into message brokers versus streaming data platform. So the typical argument. So in message brokers, we usually promote this push-based message delivery. That means consumers always subscribe to queue or a topic, and they can always listen in for incoming message. So whenever there's a message available from the producer, it will be pushed to all the consumers. So this can happen in two ways, point-to-point manner and publisher-subscribe manner. But in Kafka, it's a lock, right? That means the consumer always has to pull all the messages from the last thread location. So that's one difference. I think that's where majority of the differences come in. So in Kafka-based platforms, consumers, you have to pull in messages. And also there's another difference. That means in message brokers or message queues or other PubSub platforms, there's a way of filtering messages at the broker level. That means you can selectively subscribe to messages you want to receive, and you can filter out all the unnecessary messages. like hierarchical topic subscriptions and other advanced semantics. But in Kafka, the consumer has to do all the filtering. So typically, this is done by a string processor, something like Kafka Strings or Apache Flink. I think those are the two differences I can highlight.
And persistence,
exactly.
It being a log, you remember things,
yes,
and a queue is ephemeral.
Kafka remembers, yes. So it's always
Kafka remembers for at least a few days and maybe longer.
That's right.
Yeah, and there's an interesting insight there in that in message queues of old, they do more. You push little bits of routing or kind of sort of application logic into the infrastructure.
Yes.
And that was a thing that was happening a lot, you know, in IT infrastructure in the early 2000s. It was very ambitious about what the infrastructure would do. And you were trying to push more logic in there, which this is a little bit off topic, but I think I said topic, but it, that tended to be a bad idea because then you had the people who manage infrastructure responsible for deploying changes in business logic. And those are very different sets of sensibilities. The people who manage infrastructure don't like to change things because then they get paged in the middle of the night, you know, and, you know, crazy developers, which is kind of me and kind of you, we're like, oh yeah, let's change things all the time because the world is changing and we have to. So that decision to push stuff you mentioned, brokers being smart in message brokers, to some degree seems to have gone out of fashion in some of these newer systems. And I have this thought in my mind that Red Panda actually tries to play on that boundary a little bit in some interesting ways. Maybe we can get to, but I want to let you go on. In Red Panda is a persistent, immutable, append only log.
Exactly.
What else would you say?
Yes, so that's exactly the right definition. We can frame Red Panda as it. So basically, it shares all the semantical model with Kafka, the way the Kafka operates. Like, so we have logs, and then we have topics, and we have partitions, offsets. I mean, if you are familiar with Kafka, everything you can expect and you can see already in Red Panda, but and there's a nice thing that Red Panda shares with Kafka. It's about being wire compatible with Kafka wire protocol. So we call it Red Panda is API compatible with Apache Kafka. So if I make it more clear, that means if you already have a Kafka producer or a consumer application, you can seamlessly migrate or replace it with Red Panda without code changes. So that's the underlying idea behind what Red Panda operates. I mean, that's what you see from the outside. But Red Panda and Kafka, they speak the same language, but Red Panda has some internal differences that makes it more different than Kafka. So I'll highlight a few differences. First, it's a rewrite of Kafka in different language, I would say. C++, to be specific, because it is written in C++, and also it leverages this protocol, architecture called C-Star framework. I'll come to that in a later. Because this is written in C++, Red Panda can work very closer to the hardware level, right? Pretty much the network, compute, the CPU, and the storage, I mean, the disk. So that means Red Panda can squeeze the maximum performance out of the modern hardware, like, you know, SSDs, new generation network cards like NVMs, because this language itself gives you the ability to work very closer. And underneath, Red Panda has some clever optimization techniques so that, for example, we can bypass the page cache when it comes to reading and write. Yeah. So there are some optimizations. Yeah. And that's okay. One.
And and doesn't it then manage its own caching that it wants to do? Okay.
That's right. And then since I mentioned you about the C-Star framework, which is something like an async processing framework available for C++.
How is that? Could you spell that?
C star. It's called
C star.
C star, okay. Yeah, C star. So yeah, okay. It's not new to Red Panda, so it was already existed when this SilaDB implementation came in. You know, Cassandra.
Yes, which is a similar. I'll call it clean room re-implementation of Cassandra, kind of same idea.
Absolutely. So we did this, Red Panda did the same for Kafka as well. So in C star framework, there are a few leverage benefits we can get. One is this thread per core architecture. That means you can pin a specific thread to a particular CPU core, and it will always schedule and run in that core. So that's another advantage. Because of this, we can gain more performance and productivity from multi-core CPU systems. So because of this, okay. There will be no swapping out and swapping in context switching between threads, and a single thread can continuously work on reading and writing contiguous blocks of data. So yeah, those are a few smart things we have done inside Red Panda.
Got it. I want to explore that a little bit, and only a little bit, because there's a whole bunch of more interesting things to talk about. But I will say I'm always a little skeptical of that. So I suspect you guys have some benchmarks, and I would love to be able to publish those in the show notes if you've got stuff.
Yes.
But I'm always a little skeptical of the C runs faster thing purely. I mean, you gave some very specific things, like manages its own caching apart from the operating system page cache because it can, and thread per core. And it's, I mean, the performance of a managed language like, say, Java versus a C or a C++ is a more subtle thing, because you get optimizing Java virtual machine that, you know, finds hotspots and actually does a good job optimizing them. And, you know, the whole C performance story is interesting, because modern processors, the trivial version of that story is kind of based on what microprocessors were like when I learned what microprocessors were. You know, it's not an 8086. Okay, this isn't, we're not writing code on a PDP-11. It's not that picture in the textbook that we all have in our mind. Here's the ALU, and here's the control unit, and here's fetch X. You know, it's this massive tangle of all this weirdness. So I'm always a little bit skeptical of that. I will say a thing that I'm confident is a definite advantage is tail latency, right? Because in a JVM system, you're going to have garbage collection pauses.
Yes.
And so some percentage of the time, you're just going to have some things that just take a freaky amount of latency. And so your P95s, your P99s, they get hard to really press down. And I haven't looked into any Red Panda numbers, so I hope you can share me some links, and I'll look at them. We'll put them in the show notes. I have looked at Scylla stuff, and it seems like, total, you know, per node performance is faster, but the really dramatic thing is the tail latencies, because you don't have GC pauses. Like, that's inarguable. If that P99 matters to you, you don't want it to be in Java. And that seems like a thing. So anyway, your thoughts on that. Am I right to be skeptical? Is it, what have you seen in looking at the numbers in your time at Red Panda?
Yeah. So like you said, so we have conducted benchmarks, and which was done on AWS VM virtual machines, and we have published it openly. So you can always find it in Red Panda website, redpanda.com. I can share the benchmark report.
Awesome. Yeah. We will publish those links.
Yeah. And yeah, so we always think about the P99s and P95s, because like you said, what matters most is those tail latencies. And based on that benchmark, so we have achieved millisecond level latencies at certain levels. And conclusion is Red Panda can process up to 1 Gbps of workloads, and it can do more if configured, if you can configure it more correctly. But as a baseline, so we can 1 Gbps would be a decent workload for Red Panda.
On a single
yeah,
broker?
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
So we have different levels of slicing and dicing on that benchmark, different VM configuration and everything. We can go and check in the...
I look forward to looking at that, and we'll include it as a link, because it seems like when you've got it seems like that's from the outside, again, not having gone deep on Red Panda, like that's a big part of the appeal. You get, I mean, these are all scalable systems, so you can get that kind of throughput, but your cloud spend will be lower,
right.
You know, your carbon footprint will be lower, however it is you want to look at that. You're doing it more efficiently.
Yeah, a good thing that you mentioned about the resource consumption, because it's written in C++ and it can do more with less resources. Because of that, we consume less hardware, nodes compared to a conventional Kafka setting. And that's because of that, so the overall operational cost will be lower. And that's another goal of Red Panda, to make streaming more affordable and more achievable for mass audiences, small and medium business as well.
What kind of use cases does it find its way into? Is it just sort of anywhere streams are sold? Or what kind of things do you see that seem like sweet spots?
Pretty much more customer case studies that revolves around Red Panda is around performance. So I would say some fintech, financial market related use cases, something like stock trading application. So they demand more latencies, especially in the beginning below side of the first side, the 20, maybe the single digit millisecond ranges. So we have few case studies around that. And then we have AdTech, many AdTech customers, AdTech use case, real time ad bidding, which demands like latencies in 20s or 30s. So we have some good use cases around it. And then when we go down on the latency, when we go to more like 50s or 60s, and then we have some realistic use cases like streaming ETL pipelines. So probably for stream processing. So most applications, they can feed from Red Panda to their internal streaming ETL pipeline. So this is where we can engage stream processing engines like Apache Flink and other Kafka streams and other engine for performing streaming ETL and loading it to different systems. So this is where mainly the event routing and transformations and other filtering happens. And then we have some real-time recommendation systems, real-time machine learning. This is where all the personalization happens. For example, when you are browsing through Netflix, all the click impressions will be streamed into something like a Red Panda. I'm just giving an example.
An example.
Yeah. So, and then the downstream consumers, so machine learning application, they can process them and they can score these models and they can come up with recommendations. So that's one thing. And then real-time analytics, obviously, for counting and...
Oh, hello.
Yeah. There we go. Yeah,
Where does compute happen in a Red Panda system? I have it in my mind that Red Panda does something interesting in this, and I could be misinformed, like I said at the beginning. I don't know too much, but, you mentioned machine learning, and you're going to be a consumer and you're going to have some model that you're retraining, and it's wire compatible with Kafka, so you could hook up Pino to it and consume from a topic and have Pino be itself and solve the problems it solves. But what if I just want to write a stream processor? How does that work? Can I do that with Kafka streams, or is there some other solution? What are my options there?
Yeah, great question. So first of all, there's no computation happens inside RedPanda. So it just stores messages for you, records for you. And then as an application developer, when you are developing a consumer application, all you have to do is use Kafka API, the read API, you know, consumer groups, offset, mm-hmm. you know,
yep.
the same thing.
That whole thing.
There we go. And then you have to depend on that API to pull in messages, do your thing, and commit offsets, and let RedPanda know that, okay, I have read this much of records. This is my last committed offset. So that's a pretty much simplest consumer model. So based on this consumer model, we can derive certain new application, consumer application models, something like event-driven application, the simplest model. Those are like automated applications, something like microservices. So in these microservices, we can listen in for, we can tail a Kafka log, and we can listen in for incoming messages, process the message and trigger some action, something like raising an alarm, maybe saving it to a database or routing it to a different system, something like that, all autonomous. And then we can do something like ad hoc analysis on incoming data. So this is where all the streaming databases come in. This is where Pinot comes into the picture as well. So so what we can do is Pinot natively integrates with Kafka. So it's really easy to do the same thing with RedPanda because of the wire compatibility. All you have to do is specify the bootstrap URL and the port, and if there are any security SSL configurations, then Pinot will start pulling in data from RedPanda. Or everything is identical to Kafka as you are working with Kafka. And then what this Pinot does is, this is the difference. So in Kafka, like I mentioned, it's an append-only log, right? So it's really difficult to, once you write a message, it's really difficult for you to search it, or you have to, for you to read it back, you have to, you know, rewind it and find the exact location where you committed. So that's the mm-hmm. problem. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So how do we fix this problem? So this is where the database world comes in. So we need to have some sort of indexes, right? Indexes like a signpost pointing to a location where, okay, this is the real message exists. So that is what exactly Pinot and other streaming databases, all they do. So they consume this log, and then they can index it. They can convert it to, they can transform the consumed messages into some sort of a columnar format. Speaking of Pinot, it could be segments. You can correct me. Yeah. And then we can add certain level of indexes, and those are self-contained entities. And then what's the advantages we get as data analysts or operator? The advantage is we can query this data as data coming, as data generates, or as data arriving into Pinot. So that's for ad hoc analysis. So I'll give you an example. Let's say, for example, website logs are streaming into RedPanda in real time. Mm-hmm. And then we can pull in these logs into Pinot, and operators or SREs, you know, the DevOps people and the operators who manage these infrastructures, they can search. They can search for anomalies in these logs. I mean, yeah, so they can do some sort of ad hoc analytics on the Pinot. Also, the other use right. case is you can write predefined queries, and you can power a real-time dashboard. So it can do that's for human decision makers. And the third form is
right.
you can do some anomaly detection on automated basis, using some kind of a library like a component like Third Eye. So those are some.
Yes, StarTree Third Eye to do automated anomaly detection. Since, you know, dashboards are really anomaly detection tools, it's just that the human looking at them is the anomaly detector.
Exactly. So, and then operational analytics, embedded analytics, and user-facing analytics all boils down to this domain. That means we have fresh data coming in, and then with the help of this streaming database and streaming database technologies, we convert them into instant insight so that we can immediately make decisions with precision and scalability. So those are some good use cases we can build on top of Redpanda streaming.
There you go. There you go. Did we cover real-time machine learning? Was that in there? That's always a, you know, real-time retraining of models and all that kind of stuff. It's
yeah,
that's an interesting chunk of work. So what do you see there?
Yeah, I almost forgot that. So there are certain things you can do. I mean, I'm not a machine learning expert, but based on my experiences, you can do some real-time feature engineering, something like whenever events coming in, we can send it through a machine learning pipeline so that we can extract features and do that for other computation or training a machine learning model or scoring its accuracy. Also, we can, I think, do the real-time inferencing, if I'm correct. That means the model is online and it's already deployed, and we can invoke the model, and we can inference it and get the results back. It's like whenever a user browses three similar products in an e-commerce site, we can instantly make a decision about what are the other recommended products we should send it to this user as an ad or as a content. So those are some good use cases. And I'm seeing a few other use cases, new use cases, especially after the introduction of these large language models and generative AIs. And
okay. What? Seriously? What? I need to hear this. What's going on there?
I mean, I'm still scratching the surface. It's like a big space right now. So I believe it has something to do with these vector databases and other. And there's this concept called prompt engineering, and there's a new form of prompt engineering called RAG or retrieval augmented generation or whatever that is.
Yes. It's just on a in a discussion last night we were talking about that.
Exactly. So the role of streaming is to make data moving across this system, right? So that's the goal. That means we need to circulate this data among these different systems. Like we need to make sure that vector database sees the latest or freshest data for its, and then also when we need to augment a prompt, we need to make sure that we have the latest data available in the corporate. And with these libraries like Hugging Face and in Llama, and there are, I can drop tons of jargons here, but I'm still scratching the surface, so forgive me if I make any mistakes. But the role here is to build your own personal LLM, something like ChatGPT, for your own corporation. So it can self-sustain with your corporate business data. So the role is to use streaming data technologies to gather data and keep them in motion and feed them into those large language models within your organization so that the human users and automated systems, they can ask questions in plain English. Like, okay, take this data and tell me, am I going to profit in this quarter or not? Something like that. So, I mean, that's a very high level explanation I can give it to you. There are so many layers we need to dig into that, but we can save it for maybe next discussion.
I think that sounds like a great idea. Streaming large language models. Let's consider this an invite for you to come back as soon as you can and talk to us about that.
Cool.
My guest today has been Dunath Anushka. Dunath, thank you so much for being a part of the Real Time Analytics Podcast.
Again, thank you very much for the opportunity and thanks for having me. Thank you.
And there you have it. If you feel compelled to help us spread the word and grow the real-time analytics community, you can give us a rating on Spotify or Apple Podcasts or wherever fine podcasts are sold. If you're watching us on YouTube, hey, subscribe and, of course, hit that notification bell. And you can always share your favorite episodes on LinkedIn or Twitter or wherever it is you do social media. Thanks, and I look forward to talking to you in the next episode.